Hello, I'm Dr. Michelle Buckley from Iowa State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. Thanks so much for joining us on Baws and Bleats, sponsored by the American Association of Small Ruminant Practitioners. Just a quick note before we get started, this work is also supported by the USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture Agricultural and Food Research Initiative Competitive Program, Antimicrobial Resistance Grant Number 2020-04197, which funds my research on improving antibiotic stewardship in dairy goats to assure food safety and milk quality. As always, if you have any questions about any of our episodes, please email them to dairygoatextension@iastate.edu. I hope you enjoy today's show. Thanks for joining us today on Season 1 of Baws and Bleats, the American Association of Small Ruminant Practitioners podcast. This season, we're focusing on improving milk quality and food safety in dairy goats. Today's guest is a repeat guest, Mr. Ryan Andrus of Bridgman Hill Dairy in Vermont. As I said, he was a previous guest on Episode 2, which was titled, If You Can't Measure It, You Can't Manage It. And he's back today to help me tease out what makes a great symbiotic relationship between dairy goat producers and veterinarians. So let's start off by talking a little bit about the different types of dairy goat operations that you've been involved with over the years, Ryan.
Sure. I started on a small farmstead that was making Chev and distributing it mostly to the Bay Area, specifically Silicon Valley, which turns out there's lots of people there with expendable income that love cheese. So that worked pretty well. And then from there, I moved up to Northern California, started a large dairy for a big company up there, and was there for quite a while. And they were owned by a parent company that ended up purchasing several other large goat milk processing facilities in the Western U.S. So over the years, I got a chance to act as sort of a producer liaison, where I went out and visited the producers for these companies and got to know them and also helped troubleshoot issues as they came up. So it was about building relationships with the dairy farmers that were producing milk for these various companies, and then helping them with things like becoming certified humane, troubleshooting milk quality issues or herd health issues, management issues, training issues, bilingual issues, things like that, where it was really enjoyable for me because I got to meet other farmers and get to know them very well. And as somebody who has a lot of goats and has always been around a lot of goats, there's like a camaraderie that you feel when you come across other people, where it's like, oh, you understand me and you understand me. And this is like, we have this mutual respect and understanding that allows for a functional relationship to develop. And so there definitely were times where I met as a sort of consultant, I would meet the farmer and their veterinarian on site at the farm for various, you know, troubleshooting efforts or building herd management plans or disease management plans or prevention plans, things like that, hoof trimming plans, you know, all that parasite management, all that kind of stuff. So I did see farms from, you know, anywhere from like 30 goats to 3,000 goats, let's say. So somewhere in that range, and probably most of them landing right in the middle of that. And so that was fun, and hopefully prepares me to have a good conversation with you today.
Well, you've already got me curious. So it sounds like you could have, in some cases, acted like a liaison between the producer and the veterinarian.
Yeah, definitely. I would say not as often. It was more between the creamery and the farmer. But certainly there were recommendations, or, you know, because this spanned like several different states and different dairy regions and areas where there weren't a lot of dairy vets at all, whether they're cow, goat, or sheep, they just weren't there. So, you know, there was people dealing with very little support, and then there were people dealing with a lot of expertise, but just having a hard time of like integrating the recommendations coming from the veterinarian.
Sure. So But the things that you were there to talk about with them might have sparked conversations with their veterinarians, right?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And there were times where the veterinarian reached out to me for clarification or for a question about something. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I guess my first question is, when you were talking with those producers, what were kind of the biggest complaints or concerns that they had about working with their veterinarian, without, you know, throwing anyone under the bus? But like, what are some common concerns that producers have that maybe veterinarians aren't aware of or have a hard time addressing from your perspective?
Yeah, I would say the most common thing I heard was that, you know, my veterinarian, like, he or she doesn't really know goats very well. And they received, you know, more training in cows or other large animals. I mean, I think it's just cows. There's no other large animals that they're getting trained in. And so the sort of awareness of the difference between the species in terms of management and nutritional needs and veterinary needs and disease detection, disease prevention, disease management, all that stuff is, there's a lot of crossover, of course, between the species, but there are subtle differences that, of course, are going to be magnified when you have thousands of animals or hundreds of animals. And, you know, really important to sort of know and understand the ins and outs. And a lot of this was sort of before, I think, the veterinary community really started to use, like, I don't know if it's social media or just internet to, like, have vet groups that are coming together to share information about small ruminants. And there was sort of this siloed effect, like, regionally, where people, if there weren't a lot of goats in their area, they weren't really able to go and get that information, or maybe they weren't interested in getting that information because they just had like one goat client and then like 25 cow clients. So it wasn't really like the top of their list, right? So that was like one of the main complaints that I would hear, is just like there was a lack of understanding of like this species specific issues that come up. And then maybe another one was suggestions that were, in my opinion, like spot on from coming from the veterinarian. But integration of like applied management was missing. And so it was like, you need to heat treat your colostrum to prevent like spreading Staph aureus or yonis or CAE onto the next generation, but not, and then telling them like, here's the temperature and here's for how long, but like not really helping them to understand like how you would actually implement that on a farm where you're not doing it at all currently. And just looking around, the veterinarian looking around realizing like, does this farmer even have the capacity to heat treat colostrum? Do they have the labor? Do they have the management capability to undertake this? You know, so it's like, yeah, that may have been the right suggestion, but helping that, like supporting that further to sort of an applied management, you know, success rate was missing. So they, you know, sometimes I'd show up and be like, well, this is what they told me to do. I said, well, that's really what you need to do. But, you know, we need to talk about how you're going to do that in order to for this to be successful. So that's just two things that come to mind right there. So sort of goat knowledge overall and then the actual application of practices that are required.
Right. And with the second one, I would have to imagine that a lot of that stems from not having a good understanding of what is actually happening on a day-to-day basis at the facility. Like if you haven't taken the time to walk through and, you know, get to know what they're working with and who they're working with, then you can't really understand their capacity. But at the same time, it all comes back to time, and time is money, as a veterinarian and a producer. So if your vet's going to bill you hourly, it might not be within your financial capacity, or you may not think that it's worth the money to say, well, let's take an hour or two and walk through our facility and really get to know it. Because we have to bill you for that time. And it's probably not going to pay dividends right that very second, but down the road, it may be, you know, the thing that gets you more value in those recommendations you're getting from your veterinarian.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think the sort of clarity with which you just explained that is also something that's oftentimes missing on site. And it's in some ways it's the elephant in the room when a veterinarian shows up, is like, as soon as they get out of their truck or maybe even their drive, like the billing has started. So let's like get to it and let's be efficient and let's be effective and let's talk pragmatically about the suggestions I'm putting forth and, you know, how they're going to impact your financials down the road. Is it immediate? Is it midterm? Is it, you know, years from now? And sort of why the investment is worth it in the opinion of the veterinarian and then how to go about it. And you're right. It's there is probably more and more information available online in terms of like management practices and how to put this stuff into play. And there are some books that have come out that I think are more effective. Some of the stuff that I'm picturing as we're talking happened like 15 years ago or more. And a lot of that information back then wasn't around, but it is now. So hopefully there are more and more tools, including this podcast, that people can access to sort of fill in some of these holes.
So from a veterinary perspective, I think it behooves us, and when I was in practice, I really tried hard to do this, but letting people know up front, communication is key, right? So letting people know up front, yes, I will be happy to show up at your property, either, you know, for an emergency call or for a walkthrough to build more of a consulting relationship, but it is going to cost money, and this is how much money it's going to cost. Because we're not going to get anybody anywhere by saying, oh yeah, well, we'll bill you later. Like, don't worry about it. Or kind of, you know, lowballing, oh, well, if we can do it quick, then it'll only be, you know, X amount of dollars. So, I would always really try and be upfront and say, I charge however much as an hourly rate to drive to your facility. It's going to cost X amount. So you're looking at somewhere between this and this, depending on how long it takes. And if we can, you know, sometimes if I was going to be in the area anyway, I might say, well, I'm going to be out there anyway, so we'll split the call charge or something like that. But I think being upfront about cost and knowing, understanding that our clients are always going to be concerned about that is kind of the important first step in building a healthy relationship, right? It's the elephant in the room, like you said, and it just needs to be addressed.
Yeah, it needs to be addressed. And I think reflecting on how any relationship like this is going to be a two-way street, to where if you're going to charge that, you want to feel like you're bringing something to the table that's really helpful. And I realize in this conversation, we're probably talking to people who have a couple of goats and also hopefully people that have a couple thousand goats, right? We're hoping to sort of span that gap, which is a lot to ask in a conversation. But, you know, knowing your client as a veterinarian, knowing, you know, what the situation is, and it's not going to happen immediately, but you have to build into a relationship as a veterinarian, getting to know who this person is. Maybe it's a family, maybe it's a business, and what their limitations are, capability-wise, for implementing things and detecting things. And are they planning, like, have they already planned into a budget, like, veterinary costs annually? Most farmers do that. Obviously, they need to. They know that it's a part of having that many animals is budgeting for it. And there's probably people you showed up to when you were practicing that didn't have that budgeted, that, you know, had pets and or four or five goats or whatever they had. And so you show up often in those situations very late in the game. There's a very, very sick animal that's, you know, possibly on death's door. And they've been using Google to try and, like, solve this problem or calling friends or whatever they've been doing. And they're distraught. They're emotional. And they want you to save the day, and you show up and you say, that's a dying goat. And you say that in your head, right? You say that in your head, oh boy, what am I walking into here? You probably already know when you're on your way, right? And when you open the door and you get out and you look in the barn and, you know, it's just this depressing moment of like, well, we're going to need to put this goat down. And that's not why they called me, you know? So it's a really tough dynamic with, again, a lot of, emotion, a lot of, you know, money, time is money, as you mentioned. And so it's tough. And I think it's relationship building ultimately from both sides of this equation. It's relationship building. If you're going to have animals, you don't have them just for a moment. You have them for years. And so you need to cultivate a relationship with a veterinarian that is functional and enjoyable and you know, they're getting paid for their time, but you're getting something out of it at the same moment.
Absolutely. And honestly, if I could get one point across in this episode, I would like it to be that it is only going to benefit producers and veterinarians in the long run to start a relationship early. Start it before there's a problem. And honestly, there's always a problem. Like, there's always something that needs to be addressed. But before you have a train wreck and you're calling at 3 o'clock in the morning, I really can't think of a situation in my experience or in the experience of any vets I've ever talked to where going out, doing a walkthrough didn't wind up being worth it in the end. And so I would really, really strongly encourage people to factor that into their budget for the coming year. To find a vet in your area that is competent, and I'm sure producers, you know, everybody talks, so there are networks out there where you can identify someone worth your time or potentially worth your time to work with, and have them come out and say, this is what we've got. From my perspective, things that I wanted to know before I left a farm, when I did these types of visits, I kind of had 4 major categories that I wanted to hear about, just generally speaking, that I think would apply to any size operations. Number one, what is the goal? What are we trying to do here? That could be production-wise, that could be how many animals are we trying to have, that could be, you know, what kind of death loss are we trying to, you know, mitigate right now? But what are our overall goals? Whatever that means to you as a producer. What are your limiting factors? Is space a concern for you? Do you need to build another barn because you're maxed out on space right now? Are you limited by funds and you can only spend X amount of dollars because your milk check is this? That's the case for most large-scale producers. That's totally fair. But we need to know what parameters we're working within. If you have standard operating procedures already in place, especially for like disease management and detection, that's something that we really like to know when we're coming in. That may be something needs to be tweaked, or it may just need to be something that we're aware of. So we know how you're classifying certain diseases. And with that, also, what drugs do you keep on site? That's always something the veterinarian's going to want to know. And as we move into the next phase of federal regulations where all antibiotics on site need to be prescribed by a veterinarian, that's going to become more tightly regulated and we'll be more aware of that. But you should always let your veterinarian know, hey, we've got X, Y, and Z. And they might say, oh, that's great. They might say, you know, we should try this other drug, but that needs to be a conversation no matter what. The last category that I always want to know about is, what are your needs? How can I help you? Because if you don't know what you're looking for or what your weaknesses are, or because there's always room for improvement, right? So from the producer perspective, what do you think producers need to have ready when the veterinarian shows up?
Well, I almost think that, you know, what you just outlined would be a wonderful way to start off a relationship with a farmer. And so when somebody calls your clinic and is looking, you know, they're a new client, is to sort of almost like poise those questions up front, and upon your first visit, actually go through them, maybe sitting down or even just walking through the farm, talking about them, because it could probably, you know, help avoid lots of potential conflict or just sticky areas between the dynamic and the relationship. So yeah, good work on that. And I hope lots of people record those 4 categories, because it's really critical. So yeah, I like that. So you asked me how did I prepare? Sure. Okay. So most of the time that I had a veterinarian coming to visit was ultrasounding. And there's, you know, I've used ultrasound equipment myself and to varying degrees of accuracy, but really the equipment that a lot of veterinarians carry around or have access to is not something that I could afford to purchase on my own. And it can be very accurate and very quick, depending on the experience of the veterinarian. So I usually historically have had like 2 to 3 visits that are centering around ultrasounding my pregnant groups. And more or less, just so people know, what we're looking for is pregnant or open and how many days into gestation is the doe. And that will determine for me sort of grouping for nutritional, matching nutritional needs with her stage in gestation, right? So basically far off and close up is what you're looking at there. Or goats that are still in lactation and pregnant and, you know, how at what date should we dry them, et cetera. So it's not just who's pregnant, who's not, but really how many days into this gestation are they? And it's really, at scale, it's really important information to have and to have it accurately. So when I prepare for one of those, I have, you know, my pregnant group or the group I hope is pregnant, or usually it's multiple groups. I have all that information pre-worked, you know, exactly who's in the pen, when they were exposed to a buck. A lot of times we record any mounting that we see. So, you know, how many days into gestation do we think this doe is? I have all that information on a spreadsheet. And then I make sure I have an extra set of hands or two to help sort of make the day go really efficient. And it's usually a half day or less, but just like get the goats into position. So the veterinarian is really just ultrasounding. She's not holding a goat, or he's not wrestling a goat for you. You know, it's all sort of built in. And then usually after the ultrasound is complete, that's when I have sort of like a walkthrough and a list of questions that are outstanding from the specific ultrasound that we're doing. So those, you know, maybe we go to the kids and we start there and we just look through the kid barn. And then we might go to the teenagers and then the milkers. Sometimes we might look at production data, look at feed and nutrition, look at feet, look at overall like coat, possibly grab some fecals if we're concerned about any parasitism that might be happening. You know, it's really like that type of situation. I also do a drug inventory so beforehand so I can place an order with them. Usually before they show up, so that I don't have to pay shipping if they can get it to their clinic and then bring it on the truck and then I put it in my fridge. You know, so it's just sort of like grouping all of those things into one experience, like 3 times a year, or however often you're doing a pregnancy scanning. So that's how I prepare for it, but that's really at scale. So if you're not, regardless of your scale, one of the things that I generally do is like walking through the farm is like, hey, will you point out anything you notice that's abnormal or doesn't look right? Or maybe like if you see areas we can improve on. And just, you know, laying that out there before you start walking around often sets the tone for the conversation where it's like, I'd like your advice on this. I'd like, you know, whatever you see, just tell me and we can talk about it or I can like make a change. And so that I think is helpful. That takes, again, relationship building, but maximizing the time that that an expert is there on your facility, on your property, helping you, able to help you, willing to help you, willing to offer advice, suggestions, even if you don't choose to take them or if you just, you know, mull them over for a while, just getting that information out while they're on site rather than having them come back for something like that. Is huge. And that just takes preparedness, right? And so, like you said, if it's 3 in the morning and you're coming out in an emergency, you're probably not going to be prepared for that. So, but again, just maximizing that time, I think is beneficial for any goat owner of any scale and being willing to hear, you know, like a lot of really good veterinarians are going to come on site and realize that your goats have CL, your goats have CAE, you have overcrowding, you have, you know, feed issues, you're not trimming your hooves. Like there's a lot of things as a producer, you can't really hide. So you're kind of vulnerable. It's kind of like, you know, it's like you're letting someone come in and just look at your house. It's like, is it dirty? Is it clean? Is it a mess? Is it trashed? You know, it's like they can see everything. You can't really hide it from somebody that knows what they're looking at.
That's a very good point. And the one thing that I would comment on that, because as a like brand new veterinarian, when I would go out on operations, you know, farms, whether it was a dairy or a homestead, or just, you know, someone's pets, I did a bad job of communicating my concerns to them, in that where you said, okay, well, I put it out there when they show up, like, I want you to comment. I would probably give them a little bit more honest feedback than clients were looking for, and maybe they weren't even looking for it. And so I started realizing that I was doing this, tried to change my method of communication to before, where I was saying, oh, well, you have this, that, and this, and you should be doing these three other things instead. So, you know, that's not good. I realized that there's a reason everything happens on a farm. And no matter what the purpose of that farm is, there's a reason that producers do things a certain way. And so instead of attacking them and saying, well, that's not right, don't do that, do this instead, asking the question of, hey, I noticed you do this. Why is that? Because there's an answer 9 times out of 10. There's exceptions to every rule, but most of the time there's an answer, and it's happening that way for a reason, and it's not happening the way that I think it should be for a reason as well. And so sometimes it's really hard to come to a situation with an open mind, depending on your previous relationship with this person, or if you've heard something about them in the community before you started working with them, or, you know, even just when you drive up and you're like, oh, well, that's not right. But just stopping and saying, why is that not right, instead of jumping to conclusions, can be really productive, and also is a great way to not get people's hackles up. No one wants to be told that something's not right on their farm.
Yeah, I think there's, and I don't know how much training you guys receive in this, but there's, to some degree, it's like the veterinary version of bedside manner, right? Like, there's that. And then there's also just like, as a veterinarian, showing up on site, needing to have the ability to analyze someone's interpersonal skills and their ability to sort of manage situations, not just like goats, but systems and also people. And you can really get a sense of that just when you're just walking around a facility for the first time. You can get a sense of, like, you know, and I guess it's just reading the room, essentially, right? It's just looking, reading the environment, looking around, seeing, are things kept up? Are things cleaned up? Are they picked up? And what's the level of care? And I think assessing that, like, without even trying, it's just like an innate reflex that a veterinarian probably should have when they come to a farm for the first or second or third time, and then allowing that to impact how they go about, like, delineating the information, as you said, is like, okay, well, you know, this person is clearly trying to do everything they can to create a good environment for their herd and to create plenty of milk or whatever it is they're trying to produce, so I can really come at them with something that I think will help improve their situation. Or somebody who you can tell is barely keeping it together, and you need to be a little bit more thoughtful, possibly, about how you approach something that's really a, you know, maybe it comes in the form of a compliment sandwich or a bit of a backhanded compliment where you're it's not like it's preloaded or intended, but you're just sort of delivering it in a way where it's like, yeah, I noticed that, like, this buck looks great, but you haven't trimmed his hooves in like a year, you know. But he's got great posture outside of the fact he can't stand up straight because his feet hurt. He looks like he's got good genetics, you know, or it, whatever. I think there's different ways to deliver potentially bad information suggestions and urgings and into a different direction. But I think ultimately what you said your approach initially was is really what farmers want. It just might take a minute to develop the relationship, but most of us don't have time to, like, deal with just the, you know, we're very pragmatic, right? Farmers have to be pragmatic in essence to kind of continue to do their work and to get it done on time and to get to any sort of other life commitments that we might have, whether it be family or whatever it is that we're trying to do outside of being farmers. So I think pragmatism is huge. And so acknowledging that when you're working with farmers and not skating around things, but making sure that you're delivering bad news in a good way is important.
It's kind of made me think of, because you're right. I mean, farmers don't have time, or really like mental capacity a lot of times to start trying to solve any extra problems on their own, right? That's why you call in someone like a veterinarian, whether it's an emergency situation that you don't have the training or, you know, the license to deal with, or if it's a more overarching like production type issue. And I think for farmers, in my mind anyway, it kind of turns into like this big like tornado of daily life that is like whirling around you all the time. And as outside assistants, we can provide a little bit of order to that. And I think that that order is what helps make changes implementable. So being able to really clearly figure out what the problem is. And then I like to use the SMART goal acronym to like kind of spell things out for myself, not just, you know, on farms, but when I'm thinking about problems that I'm trying to sort out myself at work. So SMART goals, the S stands for specific, M is measurable, A is attainable, R is relevant, and T is time-based. So I think as a veterinarian, in a very general sense, our job is to be able to provide a solution that meets these requirements. So we need to really clearly state what it is, and how we're going to fix it, and how we're going to know that it's fixed. That's the measurable part, and make it attainable, which is what we talked about before with knowing the facility and what is a reasonable expectation for them. We need to make sure we're addressing the problem that this farm has that's relevant to this farm. And then give them a deadline. Say, I'm going to follow up with you. I'll call you in 2 weeks to see how this is going. If you'd like, I can come back out in a month and I'll just go through the parlor and see, you know, how the milkers are doing with their routine, or whatever it is. But, we can provide order in a very chaotic system.
No, I think that's like best case scenario right there. And not that it's uncommon. I'm just saying like that would be the result of a successfully built relationship where
that's what you're looking for though, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of farmers maybe don't know what they're looking for until something like this shows up. And at least back when I was doing more of the consulting, it seemed like, and I think this has changed in the last 5 to 10 years, but it seemed like a lot of producers sort of got swept up in the interest in goat dairy products, and the consumer interest happened. You know, there were some artisanal creameries making great cheese, and nobody really knew about it. And then all of a sudden, in like the late 90s, early 2000s, it became a thing. And so a lot of farmers that had like 30 goats were approached by a creamery. Can you now have 300 goats? Right. And so this was a common thing that happened, at least out west, with some of the early producers like Redwood Hill, Laura Chanel, Cypress Grove, where they were on the forefront of building these businesses and building the demand for the products. And so a lot of farmers were like, okay, I guess I'll quit my day job and we'll just try and do this. So there's a lot of people that came into goats and commercial goats with a variety of like management experience or animal management background. And it was a common thing where you'd see like hobby farmers that then scaled, right? And when anybody scales anything, there's always going to be a learning curve associated with it. And the best veterinarians I saw in the interactions were aware of that sort of industry norm, and were really helpful in like assisting these people as they learned how to manage at scale and the systems you just talked about, and implementing those systems and And maybe it wasn't their background didn't involve building systems like that. And so it was kind of a new concept to them. So I think that what you're talking about was actually really common. And more I hear stories about people who, you know, their family has a cow dairy and they decided to branch out and do something different and get goats to diversify. So you hear more and more about people approaching this industry from that angle, which is not what I'm talking about. But those people maybe are more exposed to systems and herd management as a whole. And so as a veterinarian, learning who your clients are, what their background is, and where they're coming from is a big part of helping to implement systems like you're talking about, and how to support that so it's actually successful. And the acronyms you went over with SMART goals, I forgot that acronym. That's amazing. It's like, yeah, that's the best way. So another way, you know, hopefully that kind of thing could be, and maybe it is, like, included in training for veterinarians, but it sounds pretty essential in, if you want to be a large animal vet and you want to work with farmers, to sort of have that training. And it's not like it's psychology, but it's more like it's just learning how to read the room of the producer and where they're coming from and where they're at in the moment and figuring out how to best help them. It isn't just showing up and saying, like, I know the anatomy of a goat. I'm going to diagnose this and then I'm going to leave. You know, there's a lot more to it than that, right? It's a lot different than, you know, like someone bringing a cat to a clinic to get vaccinated, right? This is a whole different ballgame. And I think the best veterinarians that I've worked with over the years, like, they recognize that the most impactful thing for them while they're on site is, what are they leaving the farmer with? Because he or she is going to be with that herd every single day. Whereas the veterinarian's just out once every 6 months or whatever it is, once every few months or once a year. And so you can treat an animal in that visit and save its life or improve its life, but you could also make an impact on the farmer to, you know, maybe they need to expand because they're overcrowding their herd. And if you can help them see that, that would impact the entire herd for indefinitely, possibly, right? So it's not necessarily like, I'm here to fix this goat and then leave. It's how can I implement, help this farmer implement systems to improve the quality of life for their entire herd.
Right. And I think what you're getting at is management, right? Like, managing people, managing systems, managing animals. That's what veterinarians need to be competent at. I'm not even going to say experts at, but we need to understand that that's what we're doing when we walk onto a food animal production facility of any kind. There's a lot of herd health and a lot of management. It's certainly not anything that's taught in schools, as far as I'm aware, at this time. I honestly don't even know how you would do that. I guess that's why I'm a veterinarian and I'm not in middle management in corporate America somewhere. I think I'm sure it would be beneficial, you know, if we could cram one more thing into the curriculum at vet school. Yeah, absolutely. Management would be incredibly helpful. But number one, there are some people that were born to do that type of thing and they just have that personality innately. And there's some people who really just hate that type of thing or weren't made to do it. And so I think understanding where our personality types fall and what our strengths are that we're coming into this situation with is kind of the first step. And then where the actual issue is. I have started, you know, realizing how to deal with these things by thinking about issues that I deal with that aren't related to a dairy. Like, right now I'm in grad school and I'm trying to study for my clinical pharmacology boards. And that is a really big umbrella, right? Just studying for boards. That's huge. So at first, when my boss first sat me down and said, okay, here's what you're going to do to get ready for boards, it was a very broad picture. And it was very overwhelming. And I realized I needed to break that down into very small steps and goals and say, okay, this is the first thing I need to do. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to get that accomplished. And then after that, I need to do this next step. And so that's by looking at my own life and how I handle questions and problems that I have, that's kind of how I've learned to relate to my clients. And that was what I did in practice. And that kind of goes for whether you're dealing with production animal stuff or even dogs and cats. Making it really understandable and manageable for people is a universal concept. It's just how we apply it with goats specifically, I think.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. It sounds like a lot of introspection. So you're looking at how you solve problems, and then you're figuring out how to use that information to evolve your ability to, you know, consult or help as a veterinarian. As a farmer or an animal owner, finding a veterinarian that resonates with you in that way maybe is worth the search.
It's really like we have to break a cycle, right? Like things keep happening over and over a certain way that is problematic, generally in the terms we're speaking in, because they can't do it any other way, or they don't have time to fix it or something. But it's a cycle, right? And so we have to step in, whether you're a consultant or a veterinarian, or even just the producer. Like you need to get into the mindset of, I have to do this differently, or bad things are going to keep on happening. Or it's going to snowball into something even worse. So it's really like you're breaking a cycle. And that is like when you're trying to change someone's repeated actions, that's a really hard thing to do, right?
Oh yeah, change is very hard. And in a situation like this, I've seen, you can like see the wheels turning in the farmer's head, and they're like, how on earth am I going to implement what this person is currently suggesting to me? Like I can't handle one more thing in my day. And here they're asking me to change, you know, something massive like a colostrum program. And yeah, it's just, I guess, reading the room, that bedside manner thing. And like you say, maybe it's not taught so much in school, but I think I'd like to trust that the veterinarians out there who possess those skills and have recognized them as being necessary are going to rise to the top. They're going to be the ones that have successful practices that have good reputations around town that people talk about. And so I think that that happens. I mean, I've seen it. It definitely happens. And it's in my eyes, it's an essential part of what veterinarians are doing, is really getting to know their clients and figuring out how to best help them.
And at the end of the day, I mean, I definitely used to get very frustrated with getting called for awful situations that, you know, I was the last resort for. Like, it's really hard to show up to an emergency call, especially, and say, well, why are we here? Why didn't we deal with this, you know, 2 days ago when the animal first got off feed? But at the end of the day, I mean, we're not different. Veterinarians are overwhelmed. We feel overworked and underappreciated and most of the time underpaid. And producers feel the same way. And we would do things better if we could, but most of the time we don't know how. So a lot of times when I would get frustrated, you know, you get yourself all worked up in the truck on the way out to Destosha that should have called you at 7 instead of 10 p.m. or whatever. And then you get there and you meet the people and you see the animal and you learn a little bit about what they're doing and you're like, oh, I get it. I know why this is the way that it is. And then you feel really bad and you're like, ah, I'm such a jerk. But it's not an easy job that any of us are trying to do. And I think if we can give each other a little bit of grace in saying, okay, I get it. You're not that different from me. But that doesn't mean we have to accept where we're at. We can do better and we can help each other do better. And that's going to make our lives better in the end, and our animals' lives better in the end, and our product better in the end. But it is very hard sometimes to just not be incredibly frustrated when you show up to a call. And that kind of leads me into another aspect of this I wanted to get into, which was when we do get an emergency call, because we've kind of been talking more about the consulting aspect of this relationship. But when you do have a single, either an outbreak investigation where, you know, there's something going on with multiple animals, or like a single animal, say a dystocia, where you're having trouble with a kid, with a kidding or something like that, how can we mitigate the stress and the frustration of those situations? And it makes me think about, as a veterinarian, you know, how many times I would show up to a farm and I would get called for even just like giving vaccines to a couple of animals, or or a sick animal, and it's out in a field. It's got an acre lot that it grazes, and the client hasn't caught it, can't catch it. There's no handling facilities for when they do catch it, and that's like a huge waste of my time. We're stressing the animal out, right? Trying to chase it around a field. And so just kind of how people can be prepared for those types of visits as well.
Oh, that sounds awful. I can picture that. That sounds awful.
That was my daily life when I was in practice. And it kind of got to be a joke. I'd just be like, okay, well, I'll get my cardio in. But also a conversation that happened on the phone when we scheduled the appointment of, hey, okay, I'm going to be out at 10 o'clock. Let's have the animal caught up by 9:30. Or just keep them in when you give them breakfast or something like that. Because you learn pretty quickly that, number one, it's a waste of my time and it throws off my day. But also, I'm going to charge you for the time. And so it will behoove you as the producer to say, to have that animal ready to go.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine not. Like, I'm not the kind of person that would be in that situation. I can picture it, of course, but in my mind, I feel like it's totally fair for the veterinarian to set up, you know, accountability and expectations ahead of time like that. And if they're not met, I don't know if, like, you know, calling them as a client is like an option if you have the ability to pick and choose clients. Honestly, I mean that's how I would approach it if I were a veterinarian. Is like, I'm gonna sit in my truck, like the billing meter is already on. I'm gonna sit in my truck till you get the animal where you said it was going to be. I mean, that sounds like a jerk move, but I'm just, you know, it somehow you have to help the client, give them an opportunity to understand what your day is like, why this is impacting you in negative ways. And I feel like that's a responsible goat owner is going to understand it. They're going to understand it and they're going to respond, but maybe not everyone. Right. And maybe those other ones aren't the best clients. I don't know. I don't want to be dismissive here, but it feels to me like those of us on the other end of this, you know, conversation need to own that accountability. We have to own those expectations and like pull it off, because otherwise it just doesn't work.
And letting people know those expectations is important, right? If you've never had a veterinarian and you think that we are gonna go out like Dr. Doolittle and call your goat in, that is not what's gonna happen. So I think setting those expectations was something I didn't do originally, explicitly saying you need to have your animals caught up and ready for me, because I assumed, like you did, that people would understand that. So the onus is on both sides here. And even for, you know, preg checks, like if you're checking a couple hundred animals, like it sounds like you do every so often, having the facilities to do that quickly, having a chute system or headlocks or something where you can just say, boom, 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 we're going down the row and we're going to ultrasound quickly. It can be a very efficient process if you have the handling facilities. And if I have to go catch every single goat by hand and wrangle them and, you know, stand backwards holding them while I'm ultrasounding, I mean, that's going to take a lot of time and kill my back, and there will be a surcharge for back pain.
Yep. And I think just hearing that, like on the other side of that equation, like, We should be expecting that as farmers. If we're that complacent in how we handle this relationship, I think that should be expected. So, but you're right. Clarifying that stuff up front is huge. And I think for you, honoring your time and being like, this client is not worth my time, essentially, unfortunately. Unfortunately for them and their animals, they're going to have to keep shopping for the right vet, because I'm not the right one. My expectations are too high and they can't meet them. And just being real about that. So anyway, accountability, expectations from both sides. You know, as a farmer and a goat owner, I would say we would want our veterinarians to be accountable to, like, being, you know, honesty. If they don't know, like telling us up front, I'm not sure, but it could be X, Y, and Z. Oh, okay. How do we determine if it's X, Y, or Z? Well, we're going to have to run some tests, and that's going to cost, you know, this many dollars. And, you know, sort of laying out those things, and as a farmer, making sure you're asking those questions how much is that blood work going to cost? And what am I ultimately going to do with the results of it? Am I going to just sell this animal? Well, maybe I should just sell this animal anyway, because her sale is not even going to cover the costs of that blood work and the analysis and shipping it to, you know, Cornell or Davis or wherever the blood work's going. So I think bringing that pragmatism to those conversations in the expectation part, the goat owner has to sort of own that end of it and like push for those questions to get answered. And like we talked about in the other episode, it's sort of like, what are you going to do with the information you gain from doing these, whatever the analysis might be, and answering that question or asking that question as a farmer, you know, is it worth doing this blood work? And what are we going to do differently if it comes back positive or negative, or, you know, just having that conversation ahead of time so they know what they're getting into. But I think having the expectations on the farmer side of it, of like, what do you need from this visit? What do you need from this relationship? It's not just prescriptions. It's not just, you know, this one goat that happens to be sick this one time. It's a lot more than that. And how are you going to get what you need out of the relationship from the farmer end of things too? So yeah, I think having those conversations and making sure that the information that you would gain is going to be something you can apply and make a difference in your herd with. But ultimately, the collaboration is to make it so your business is more functional and your herd is more comfortable, right? And one of the things that I wanted to bring up was, I see this, or have seen it frequently, is farmers decouple nutrition from veterinary care. And I think that that is a mistake. And I think that if you have, especially a large amount of animals, your veterinarian and your nutritionist, if you have one, they need to be, I don't know, I don't want to say on the same page, but they need to at least know what each other is doing. More so the veterinarian understanding what the nutritionist approach is and how they're going about it. And I think there can be, a farmer can get caught in the middle of that, and they're hearing one thing from one party and another thing from another party, and it's not like jiving. And it's very frustrating. And ultimately, the goats are suffering and the financials are suffering. So I think that that's a very sticky area that everybody needs to be cautious of. And, you know, having a vet show up to like a major problem in your herd and it having it be nutritional in nature puts the veterinarian in a very difficult position, right?
There's a lot of egos involved. Because sure, we have our area of expertise, right? It's animal health. And nutritionists, like nutrition is a very, you know, you can go way down that rabbit hole. And I have a lot of respect for people who are very knowledgeable and nutritionists, because that's not something that I was trained on extensively in vet school. I would have needed to go get a master's or a PhD in nutrition to really feel comfortable giving nutritional recommendations for large scale operations that were like tailored. And so I understand that a nutritionist is going to come in with a chip on their shoulder if I come to them as a veterinarian and say, this isn't working. What you're doing is causing a problem. That's not going to sound good either, because they're like, well, I'm the expert in this. So how can you tell me that I don't know what I'm doing? It definitely, that is a very sticky situation, and that goes for any large-scale operation, I think, whether you're dealing with goats, cows, hogs, sheep, whatever. That is definitely a very common point of contention on in production animal medicine. And so using those same communication skills with your producer and your nutritionist, I think, can get us very, you know, really far, where we can say, look, here's what I'm seeing. Why is this happening this way? Instead of just coming out and saying, this doesn't work. And then how can we come together and get, you know, and do the best thing for the animals? Because at the end of the day, what's good for the animals, good for the producers, good for the veterinarian and the nutritionist. So we need to keep them as our primary focus. And I think if we can do that, then everybody wins.
Yeah. I think as the farmer in that, in the mix of that dynamic, is you're kind of the composer of like the orchestra, right? You have all the goats in one section, you have the nutritionist over here, the veterinarian over there, and you know, the milk contract over there in the back, that's like the tuba. But you have to like have those expectations already aligned of like, this is what my veterinarian's going to bring to the orchestra, this is what my nutritionist's bringing to the orchestra, and I have to figure out how to make sure they're not like pointing fingers at each other. And it's a lot. It's a lot for the veterinarian, for the farmer to have to manage, but it's essential, because unless you can find the rare person that can do both, which is a very rare person, they are out there, but it's built in like finger pointing excuse, right? So it's worth bringing up, but there's nothing we can like solve between the two of us in this conversation for anybody else, except that having that open communication is ideal. And ideally, you would even have them in the same room as each other with you managing the conversation like once a year, right? Ideally. There's also another part of that equation where you can have the nutritionist doing a great job, the veterinarian doing a great job, but the farmer not delivering the feed properly or screwing something up. There's a lot to screw up in between what's suggested from a nutritionist and what's actually consumed by the goat, right? There's a lot that can be screwed up in that equation too. So it's not like it's just A plus B equals C. So I think, but it was on my list of things to mention in this conversation, because, you know, when it comes to expectations, there's lots of different parts of the orchestra that the farmer needs to sort of like manage.
And I think that goes for a lot of other people that come on the farm. I mean, we don't need to just, you know, throw nutritionists under the bus here. Veterinarians and producers are going to see, you know, drug reps separately. A drug rep might come on the dairy and say, hey, I can do X, Y, and Z for you. This happens a lot in cow dairies. And as goat dairy production ramps up and gets to be more popular, it may happen in that arena as well. But or consultants, you know, coming on and talking with a producer and saying, well, your vet needs to be doing X, Y, and Z. And then walking away, and now the producer and the veterinarian aren't on the same page. There are a lot of other people that can get involved with that relationship and have impacts on it. And basically, I think the moral of the story is we need to keep lines of communication open. And I would say early and often is the best rule. Whether you're talking about, you know, some other person that is affecting your relationship, your nutritionist, a consultant, a salesperson, whatever, or even if we're going back to, you know, animal health, if you have a sick animal that you're concerned about, early and often, let your veterinarian know, hey, I've got someone off feed, I'm a little concerned about it. Don't call 3 days later when they've been off feed the whole time and now they're, you know, screaming and lateral and on death's door.
Yeah. Yep.
The best rule.
And I think it's important. Again, talking about this accountability thing is like, I learned early on, these are the like four or five things that when I call a veterinarian with a problem, they're going to ask me, what's the body temperature? Like, how long has it been going on? What does the manure look like? Is the goat drinking water? You know, there's like whatever the handful of things are that your veterinarian's going to, like, you don't just call and say there's a problem and then they ask you four questions and you say, oh, I need to go check. Let me call you back. Like, you got to have those things answered already ahead of time.
Right.
And what you're talking about there with all the different people whose voices or opinions might affect the overall situation, I think it's probably ideal to have your veterinarian be your most trusted source of information.
Wow.
And then, right? Well, think about it. And then,
I
think it makes the most sense if you're talking about a problem with the herd or the animals.
Right.
As long as your veterinarian, you have that trusted relationship with them.
Absolutely.
You can come to them and say, hey, somebody's trying to sell me this new milk replacer. And that veterinarian can tell you, oh, yeah, that product, I've heard a lot of good things about it. Or I had another client that used that product and, like, all the kids died, right?
Right.
There's huge information you can learn from just checking things against a trusted source. And, again, in my opinion, ideally that should be the veterinarian, if at all possible, having that be your main sort of checkpoint. And it's not like you know, maybe there's some way, depending on your relationship with your veterinarian, that you can have conversations like that don't have to wait 6 months for them to come visit, whether it's an email or a phone call, something like that. But yeah, I think if you have one point that's kind of helping filter out some of these other possible inputs coming in, because I know you're right, the drug reps, all that stuff is happening and is coming, and they're all fighting for business, and right. They're just looking to make money, and it's that's kind of a tough thing to have to juggle. And
right. Yeah. There's one question left that we need to answer before we wrap this up, and that is, how do you find a great goat vet? Because we're not in vet schools, we don't cover small ruminants the same way that we cover, you know, small animals and pigs and cattle. It's something that you really have to go out and find the experience yourself. We don't have people in certainly not every town in the U.S., but even every region. I mean, there are definitely goat strong areas where I think there's probably, because there's a higher concentration of goats, there's more veterinarians working with them. But there's a lot of areas where, you know, people are going to be listening and say, yeah, well, this is great. This is all, I would love to have this from my veterinarian, but I can't find one that will even come out, or I can't find one that's halfway decent. And I certainly don't want people to think that they need to start like speed dating within, you know, their veterinary pool in their town where they're like, oh, well, you don't check these boxes, I don't want to deal with you anymore, and have to go through that process. So as a producer, what steps have you taken to be able to find veterinarians that you enjoy working with and that are productive or add to your productivity, I should say, and, you know, other friends that are producers as well? Like, what tips do you have for people for finding this unicorn out there that we've been talking about for this whole episode?
Yeah, great question. I would say the initial approach should be networking with other goat owners. Maybe that's through the American Dairy Goat Association or just your community, goat shows, people you know. And just, you know, as I mentioned, I think early on, like, whatever your field is, your field of expertise, like if you're a goat farmer and then you get to talk to other goat farmers, it's almost like therapy because they actually understand you. So I think that network is essential anyway, but this is one of the many ways that that network can benefit your operation, is just asking around. And sometimes you have to pay a little bit more and pay a little bit more travel time, but what you get from the relationship is way, way, way worth it. And so I think that there's a bit of a gamble that you have to undertake as a farmer or an animal owner, to where, you know, there is a vet down the road who's willing to come up, and it might be, I don't know, $200 less per visit, but this other person that's available an hour and a half away would come for this much more money, but I would get a lot more out of the visit, and sort of learning that. And the best way, again, is going to be networking with other people. And then, as I mentioned earlier, finding a veterinarian who's honest, who can tell you, like, I don't know the answer to this, but I will find out for you. And that sometimes is worth more than someone thinking they already know the answer to something, because of, from what I understand, at least, there's just a lot more information sharing that's very quick and very responsive in the vet community, like nationwide. The small ruminant vet community is like, they're interested in helping other veterinarians who don't have a lot of sheep and goats in their area and in their practice. And so there's networking that happens with information that is very quick and very effective. And I think that's like sort of like the new norm, is if you can find somebody or finding a practice. This is something that I have had luck with, finding a practice that has multiple vets and they have a good reputation, and maybe it's with cow farmers that you know, but they have somebody on their crew, one of their veterinarians, who specifically enjoys small ruminants. And that individual is like, oh, I'll take that client. I want that client. Or, you know, and then that ends up being this like wonderful relationship where it's you're not working with the vet your neighbor who has cows works with, but it's the same practice. You're getting a different vet. And so networking through that way and just finding somebody who's both passionate about small ruminants and willing to like find out the answers. you know, unless you're in an area where there are lots of goat farms. And then in that case, it might be a pretty simple search. But as a farmer, I see this similar as like when I built my parlor, like what kind of equipment am I going to go with? Okay. And there's a financial element to it, but there's also a service element to it. And who knows who's going to be around, who's going to help me fix my parlor 2 years from now when it stops working, or I need this one part repaired, or this, that, or the other. And I think in small ruminants, you're kind of used to dealing with obscure things because it's not as common as like a cow dairy milking system or a cow dairy chute or the design of the pens of the barn. So you're definitely already at this point used to dealing with sort of fringe knowledge. And so if you can find that person using those same sort of networking approaches, that's certainly the best. And I've also had success with people in different parts of the country that are maybe more isolated, where they might have an expert come out once or twice, and that expert shows up and meets, like a small ruminant expert, and meets with the veterinarian and the farmer, and they do sort of like a half-day intensive. And then everybody learns a ton of information, and then that expert doesn't come back for years or something. But it's sort of having the veterinarian who knows who that expert might be and how they might be able to get them out, if that's feasible financially, if it's realistic. And, you know, there's different ways to go about it, but certainly networking with existing farmers and animal owners is the best way.
Yeah, that makes me feel really good too, because when I started my practice, I mean, I was fresh out of school and had done mainly dairy cow stuff. And so I started seeing all these goats and pigs and all kinds of stuff that weren't dairy cows. And I was like, I would just tell clients, look, I don't know. I'm not an expert in this yet, but I'll come out and try and I'll do my research and I can connect with people and I'll try and help you. And it was amazing to me how many people were like, that's amazing. I just want someone to come and help and try. And that's all I'm asking for. And so I would encourage veterinarians, if you're in a community where there's no one serving the small ruminant population, especially if there is, you know, a lot of production, like production animal type settings, not just the companion animals, although those definitely need care as well and have a special place in my heart. But just go try. I know it. You know, if you don't have time, you don't have time. Like if your schedule is overbooked, and if you're just nervous and scared because you're not a goat person and you didn't grow up with dairy production or anything like that, it's okay. Because most of the time people just want you to come out and try. And that's the point of this podcast, is to get information out there and to be a resource. So even if a question isn't answered in this podcast, if people have questions that they want to talk about, email us at dairygoatextension@iastate.edu. And if we can't answer the question, we will put you in touch with someone who can and try and help in that respect. The other plug that I would say is for producers, if you can always go on the American Association of Small Ruminant Practitioners website, which I'll put a link in the description for this episode. They have a Find a Practitioners page. So that's where veterinarians can go when they know that they like working on small ruminants and they're looking for, you know, and they're willing to offer that service in your area. You can see where the closest one is and reach out and contact them and say, I need help.
That's amazing. I didn't know that existed.
It does.
There you go. That answers that last question. You can delete all that conversation. The only other thing I want to mention is, you know, when we getting back to that orchestra analogy with like the different inputs on managing a farm, is Google. Google has become like part of the orchestra. And I would imagine that a lot of veterinarians struggle with showing up to a situation and being like, well, Google told me that, you know, I have floppy kid syndrome and all my kids are dying, and, you know, or Google told me this, or Google. I can just only imagine that that's a hard hurdle to sort of get over and get through. And I think as a farmer, we have to be cognizant of that. Like, don't start a conversation with, you know, I saw this one. Or, I mean, you can bring it up, of course, but just be ready for, I don't want to say like immediate dismissal, but like
an eye roll. An eye roll is coming.
Yeah. And I think it's warranted. I really do. And I think it's not like you shouldn't arm yourself with data and try and do some research on your own. You should, but it's not like a DIY, like, you know, how to put up sheetrock properly. Like, there's a lot more nuance to, like, animal anatomy and behavior, and again, talking like nutrition is the foundation of animal health. So you look at, like, well, if you're not feeding them right and they don't have the right hormones, then, you know, this is going to happen. There's so many complex things and subtleties in diagnosing animal issues that I think using Google should just be done conscientiously. Right? Is that something that we shouldn't leave that out?
That's a very good point, and I'm glad you brought it up. And honestly, to be fair, I'm a new mom, have an 8-week-old son, and I'm very comfortable taking care of livestock. I was a nanny in college, but I didn't deal with infants. They were a little bit older. So I have definitely been a victim of Dr. Google myself and, you know, have looked a few things up. And so I understand that Google is a very easy resource for people to utilize. And I certainly will eye roll clients as well when they say, well, Google said, obviously in good humor. But I do also try and encourage people to find other resources. So especially for like my small scale clients or people that are new to dairy goats, I really love the stories guide books. So stories guide to dairy goats, or they even have one for miniature livestock for our Nigerian dwarf people out there. But I would much prefer you have that book on hand to utilize as a resource first before you go to Google. And every veterinarian has their own recommendations for resources as well. So please speak with yours for other ideas. I also really like websites that end in .edu. They're usually extension websites or university websites, so that's pretty reliable information. .org can be helpful as well, although generally those are nonprofit organizations, so depending on their agenda, your information may be a little bit skewed. It really depends on who is operating that website. So I would say start with recommendations from your veterinarian, and then .edu websites are generally pretty helpful as well.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful recommendation, and I would just say, having done it in the past and having been a part of it vicariously through other people and getting like phone calls in the night and whatever, is like most of the time you look something up online, and it's probably true for new moms as well, is it's going to take you toward
yes,
fear,
absolutely,
and toward panic. And I think that's why, like, I personally avoid it. Like, if I have some, like, health thing, I'm like, I'm not going to look it up online because it's going to scare the shit out of me. And I don't want to be scared. And so it's not productive being scared. So I think not panicking as a producer when you look something up. You know, I had a client once who had their herd had goiters. So, like, you know, under the chin, some extra, like, baggage there from just nutrition and being well fed. And they were convinced it was CL.
It's an easy,
and you know, and rightfully so, right? If you read the right article, it's going to tell you, like, there's this abscess, you know, it can be on the jaw or it can move from, you know, under the ear, could be down in the throat. And so they were convinced for like several days in full panic mode, not sleeping. And, you know, and then I came out and visited, and I was like, that's not CL. That's a goiter. Or the same thing happened with a tooth abscess. And this guy was convinced his herd had CL for over a year. And I said, no, you got to stop feeding dried whole kernel corn because your goats are breaking their teeth, and then the problem will go away. And it did. And so I that's why I recommend not doing it, is because it takes you to this place of fear and like panic that's unproductive and not healthy. And then also, it intervenes with the orchestra performing like smoothly. So anyway, I just thought that was worth mentioning.
Yeah.
And congratulations on being a mom. That's very exciting.
It's been fun. Yeah. Awesome. Well, this has been a really great conversation, Ryan. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your insight. I think people are going to get a lot out of this discussion.
Awesome. I enjoyed it as well. Bye, everybody.